Afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another edition of the News in Review, a chance to reflect on the events of the past week. Joining me, as always, is my excellent panel from Youngstown, Ohio, author, activist, teacher, and who knows what else, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Simon, it's a pleasure to be here, and I want everyone to know that the Browns play at 4:30 today, and I'm on this show. That's how much the show and the panel means to me, and I'm looking forward to a great afternoon of giving and taking and kicking and biting and screaming and all that stuff.
Yeah. The latter seems to be mostly what this program is all about. And from the City of Angels, author, teacher, and psychologist, Dr. Gary Penn. Gary, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Simon. I am happy and proud to be a member of such an esteemed group.
Okay, you can stop lying. Are you ready to get the gloves off?
Oh, well, that's not too hard for me. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
And also from the City of Angels, Ace Attorney Peter Haven. Peter, fabulous you could make it to the program.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I couldn't tell whether Sam was talking about this show or my idea of a really good Saturday night, but I'm really glad to be here. Thank you.
And last but by no means least, my very good friend from New Jersey, Bill Conrad. Bill, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here, and I will try to share any great knowledge that I have, and mixed in with that will be some outlandish ignorance on what's been going on for the past week.
Off air, I mentioned this to you, and I know that you hadn't heard the news, so I'll just blurt it out and ask for the rest of the panel's opinion. Did you know that on Friday, Chris Christie made an executive order that anyone coming to or arriving in New Jersey who had been in West Africa playing with Ebola was now under a mandatory 21-day isolation period. Can't remember the nurse's name, but she just got back on Friday, and she's pretty pissed off about it. And anyone got any thoughts? Is this a good strategy? Let me start with you, Sam.
I think it's what's erring on the side of caution isn't such a bad idea with something like this that people are still talking about and they're still doing learning about it and all that. And if these people are going to these countries, and I applaud them for this human, the dignity and all that, and compassion, and I think some are doing it on a volunteer basis and not getting paid, and they're going over there, they potentially become a risk, as we've seen already. We've seen one person go over there and come by and die because there weren't proper precautions in place. A couple of people got sick, have been quarantined, have become healthy. So, and then, of course, there was the doctor in New York City who I think was with his fiance, went bowling, was out in the subways. And look what he possibly exposed to other people, might not be in quarantine, and he got sick, and he's at Bellevue now. So you're going over there, and it's a dangerous disease that we haven't got the all the answers for yet. So I don't think a 21-day quarantine is so bad for those going over there. I mean, I think I got to applaud Cuomo, Christie, and I think the governor of Illinois did the same thing. I'm assuming that's because that's the only countries flying in and out of, you know, those three countries, those airports are the only ones servicing them. Simon, as much as you, I know you were going to take, you canceled your vacation with Jan, didn't you, to Sierra Leone?
Yeah.
And Peter, you were going to go.
We were going to sling.
Peter,
we were also going
to
swing
like
by Liberia.
Yeah. And my wife and I are definitely not going for Christmas break to Liberia. But other than that, I think those people who are flying over there need to be quarantined. I think that's erring on the side of caution and that. And I also, I want to applaud the president for. You know, that girl got healthy. He invited her over, and he's trying to tell everybody, "Hey, let's get our hands on the facts and not the and let fear play into it." And he's urging everybody to be cautious too and do the right things. And the only problem is I think you now have a fight between the feds and the states, and I don't think that's going to be a problem at all. I think the states are going to. I mean, Peter, you probably could speak better to that about the laws and everything. But again, it's hearing on it's coming down on the side of caution. And I applaud the three governors for doing that. And I don't think that nurse should be surprised. Heck, she's not being treated any different than some other people just flying in America have been treated with by the TSA.
Okay. Peter, do you have any thoughts on this?
No, not really. I mean, I have a feeling it's probably an overreaction, but probably an overreaction is better than an underreaction in this kind of situation. And it's interesting, she's been quarantined for 21 days. And I'm just trying to figure out what exactly that means. Is she confined to the hospital? Is she confined to some sort of quarantine sector in the hospital? I can't help it, but I'm just curious about who's paying for that. And interestingly, if you were going to challenge this legally, I don't know if a court would overturn it, and I don't know if they could do it in time to shorten her 21-day quarantine period. So it probably is immune, no pun intended, from any kind of legal challenge because it's just, you know, a court can't really put itself into a position to overturn something like this. So, you know, what are you going to do? It's probably a little bit of an overreaction, but probably an overreaction is better than an underreaction in these kinds of situations.
Gary, any thoughts?
You know, I don't know. I don't have a lot of thoughts on this. It doesn't necessarily, I kind of agree with Peter. It doesn't necessarily bother me. I do know that that we are, as a country, you know, for the bravest and the strongest, we're rather hysterical about these things. And fear is probably the worst contagion that we have. I would think the most dangerous contagion we have, I would think, would be fear rather than the idea of Ebola and becoming a widespread thing. But, I would like to defer to science and to what scientists say. So I really don't know what the scientists say. The ones I've heard say usually that this is not necessary, but it doesn't bother me. I mean, would I want to sit there and hug someone who came back from Sierra Leone or from Liberia who was a healthcare worker and showed no signs of symptoms? No, I wouldn't. So I'm ambivalent.
Bill, seeing as this is in your state, I know that you know little about the story, but do you think it's an overreaction by Christie?
You know, on this one, I think he's made a right decision. I have my concerns because, you know, I'm hoping that they'll be able to track travelers that go through there, because I believe that the person that died in Texas had lied to to the, you know, the State Department or the Health Department or somebody and said he told them that he had not been in that area originally, and that's why they didn't take any corrective actions to quarantine him or anything when he returned from that. So he lied, and then he picked a fight with them, saying, "Well, it's because I'm a foreigner that you're not giving me good health." You know, you're not covering me health-wise, and now you quarantine me and you're treating me like a second-class citizen, and yet he lied about the whole thing. So I'm hoping that we're able to track that. The other thoughts are there any kinds of legal ramifications that if we quarantine that person, you know, there's going to be loss of wages, there's going to be loss of job. I mean, can they actually terminate somebody for not showing up to work because now they have an extra 21 days that they're not going to come into work, you know, if they don't have any sick time or something saved up? You know, what goes on with that? Who's going to pay the medical bills? Is it your personal insurance company? You know, who's footing the bill for that? And again, I'd like to hear from Peter if there's some kind of legal ramifications. Additionally, if you do infect somebody on purpose because you're just are being selfish about whether you're contagious or not, does that make you liable for being sued by other people because you were infectious and you lied to the government? You know, I remember some stories about people who had HIV and still slept with other people without condoms and passed it on, and that there were some court cases about holding them personally responsible for the being infected by people who knew that they were contagious. So, kind of curious about those kind of questions.
Yeah, that actually is a great question.
Well, if it's directed to me, there's a lot of different things going on there, and there's a lot of potential answers to these questions. The first sort of question is, when the government does something like this and it quarantines someone like this, it's essentially depriving a citizen of a constitutional right, among them, you know, liberty. It's taking away your liberty. And the test that is typically employed by courts when a constitutional right is being taken away from you is basically a rational basis test. Does the government have a rational reason for doing what it's doing? And is the curtailment of a constitutional right reasonably tailored towards achieving the rational basis? And, you know, without the benefit of any kind of medical scientific point of view on this, it sounds to me like it would pass the rational basis test. And if a court is asked to review this at any time during the 21-day period, I think a court would be very reluctant to overturn it because, the risks of being wrong about the quarantine and letting someone loose in the population would be so much greater than whatever harm befalls this person for a 21-day quarantine stay. Another interesting question that Bill raised is, you know, what about her employment and her wages? And I'm not sure who her employer is, but when
Doctors Without Borders.
Doctors Without Borders. Well, I would find it hard to believe that they would take any negative action against her at all because she was quarantined, in terms of firing her, docking her pay, or, you know, anything that would be perceived as a negative employment reaction. If they did, they would probably open themselves up to some type of legal claim by her against them for some type of wrongful termination. Another question is, who's going to pay for all this? I would think that if the government is imposing this quarantine, the government should pick up whatever tab there is for the quarantine. The government may try to say that it's a health care issue and it belongs to her medical care insurance to pay for it. And there may be some squabbling about all of that and who ends up footing that bill at the end of the day. If she gets stuck with a big hospital bill that nobody else is picking up the tab for, you can be sure that that will result in some kind of litigation. And then Lastly, Bill talked about potential criminal actions or civil actions based on people who know that they're exposed to some type of deadly virus and they recklessly or negligently expose others to this type of deadly virus. And yes, the short answer to that is yes, there can be civil lawsuits brought as a result of that. And a civil lawsuit is basically someone just saying, you know, you hurt me and you should have known better and now you owe me money. And as far as criminal prosecution is concerned, the standard is usually, you know, reckless behavior. You were reckless or intentionally did this to someone else. And there is the potential for criminal prosecution, although with something like Ebola, it's so new, our understanding of it isn't that sophisticated right now. With some of these other diseases you've talked about, like HIV, we do know enough about it that some prosecutors have in the past brought claims against people who recklessly or intentionally got other people exposed to the virus because they were angry or whatever they did. So that's sort of the big response in a nutshell, as best I can give it.
Okay, let's move on. Gary, I almost considered flying out to see you earlier this week. I was in need of some good psychiatric advice. Tuesday morning, I got out of bed and turned on the TV, which is my daily routine, put on channel 200, CNN, and CNN was not there. Apparently, there's a tiff going on between Time Warner and Dish Network, which unfortunately is the company I have, and no CNN. I mean, I was shocked. So for days, I've been forced to deal with MSNBC, Al Jazeera, Fox. I played with Fox briefly, hated it, and today I discovered yet another channel, something called Newsmax, which is marginally right wing of Attila the Hun. It makes Fox look positively centrist. Gary, what should I do?
I guess Newsmax is the ISIS of radical Islam. So sorry to hear that. I don't know. I don't know, Simon. It's it's a feeling of helplessness where you have corporations duking it out. The problem, and this goes to the core of your frustration, is that you really don't have any options. You're just a schmo. And I don't like when I feel like a schmo. And when I feel like a schmo, it's like it enrages me. You know, don't you know who I am? I'm Dr. Gary Penn, you know? And yet I'm just a schmo. So I think that's the beginning of the rage. You could certainly write letters and things like that. And maybe there are more options as streaming comes forward. And I think a lot of the networks are going to go around cable. I think it's a big deal. Maybe one of the other panelists knows this, but I think it's kind of a big deal that CBS earlier this couple weeks ago started the stream. So you don't have to package things. I know a lot of what the cable things is that they package like 70 channels that we all pay for that we don't want. Right. This is what you get when people say, well, let private business keep government out of it. Well, this is what happens sometimes. And we get we end up paying all this money for things. When do you listen to Home and Garden, or when do you listen to Bravo, or when, like, there's a lot of stations I listen to, probably or watch maybe 10 stations, 15 stations. and I'm paying for 70 of them. So it's kind of a drag that way.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I have something like 1,000 stations, you know, 500 of which are pay-per-view, 400 of them are QVC. and so, yeah, I mean, in reality, there's probably 150 usable channels, and you know, it just pisses me off. You know, the one channel that I want to watch has been taken away. So, question for you, Peter. I did write a nasty letter to Dish Network, they got back to me with this great offer. They're very upset that I'm upset, and to appease me, they're going to give me a $5 a month discount for 6 months. Now, here's the real question. I signed a contract with Dish Network, and that contract included CNN. And my contract is for 2 years. I've still got 10 months to run on it. What's my legal position? I would really prefer to just get out of the obligation with Dish and go somewhere else. Can I do that?
You know, I always tell people when they ask me questions like this, can I do that? Or people often say, they can't do that, can they? And my response is always the same. You can do anything you want. It's just a question of what the consequences are. You're free to break a contract. You have every legal right to break a contract. Question of what the consequences are, and I suspect the consequences here are if you discontinued your use of Dish Network, first of all, I'm not quite sure how that would mechanically be done. Would you just disassemble your Dish or what? I think the bottom line is they're still going to provide you with service, and they're still going to bill you. And when these bills go unpaid, they're going to still hold that debt against you, and you could spend a long time trying to convince somebody that you don't owe them any money, and they might turn it over to some sort of collection agency, and then you have an issue with your credit rating, blah, blah, blah. So, unfortunately, that battle is not easily won because, you know, just the scales are tipped against you if you want to fight that war. And secondly, the other thing that we think about is, okay, you signed a contract for Dish Network and you're getting something like 1,000 channels. Well, how much is that worth per month if you don't get one of those channels? You're still getting 999 others. And Dish Network has weighed in on the subject, and they say, oh, that's terrible. Here's $5 a month off. So they're taking away from you an argument that you've been damaged because they say, yeah, he lost a channel. It was unfortunate. It was beyond our control. We couldn't do anything about it. But we've recognized his damages. We've knocked his bill down $5 a month, I guess, for the remainder of his thing. And it's kind of hard to argue that somehow of your $100 cable bill and your 1,000 channels, that somehow CNN is worth more than $5 a month, and how much more? It's just the problem that you're in. You don't have a lot of leverage one way or another. But the short answer to your question, if you want to break your contract, you go right ahead. But I think that you're still going to get billed, and you're still going to have to return that Dish Network stuff. And if you lose the Dish Network stuff, then they're going to sue you for the loss of the Dish Network materials, the Dish, and what have you. So it's kind of a tough thing to get around, in my opinion.
Well, I'm still very grumpy over it.
You know, yeah, well, you know, just think how much more grumpy you'd be if they didn't give you the $5.
Well, my grumpiness actually involves the $5. I specifically said to them, why don't you let me out of the contract so I can go somewhere where I can get the product I want, you know, or a substantial discount. And I don't class $5 as a substantial discount.
Well, you lack what we call bargaining leverage in these kinds of circumstances. When you go to them and you say, let me out of the contract, you're basically coming to them from the same position as someone on the street who walks up to you and says, give me $5, please. You know, maybe you'll give them $5, maybe you won't, but you're basically relying on their generosity to let you out of the contract, and you don't really have any bargaining leverage, and if you try to get leverage by, for example, withholding payment from them each month, then you can get into other problems that I talked about. You know, one of the things I always tell people in these kinds of situations is, you know, if you have a problem with your provider when you have any kind of contract, well, let's pull out the contract and let's see specifically what it says. Now, oftentimes that's not a very heartwarming experience because you see that the contract basically says in one form or another that you're screwed six ways from Sunday and that you've signed away your life and there's nothing you can do about it. And that's probably what it says, but it's still helpful to get an idea of what the contract says. And many of these contracts specifically contain what's called dispute resolution provisions, and they talk about what you do in the event of any kind of dispute. And I tell people, if you really feel strongly about it, then, you know, pursue the dispute resolution provision in the contract and see what happens.
Good plan. Sam.
I'm not sure it's a good plan, but, you know, it's a plan.
Sam, do you have any thoughts on this subject?
All I can tell you is you told me on Friday to drink heavily, and when you're thinking about it, if you can't get out of the contract, if you think those contracts are bad, how about the AT&T cell phone family plans? Holy crap. You talk about a tough one to get out of and change and what's grandfathered in and what isn't grandfathered. Unlimited text day. You know, those are pains. I mean, they're bigger, you know, and Peter's 100% right. You know, the key word he used was leveraging power. The only way you could do it, Simon, as I see it, is strength in numbers. And I'm sure a bunch of other people who own Dish Network have probably been screwed over or thought they got terrible service. You got to get up with them, start a Facebook page, do a social networking thing, and, you know, maybe if enough people bitch, you get enough people to complain about them and bitch and find out about that, they'll do something for you. But, other than that, you probably end up to get one Dish Network for 1,000 stations that don't include CNN, and then you're probably going to have to go online and watch CNN Live.
You see, that worked for a couple of days, but guess
okay.
What?
What?
That option I discovered this morning had been turned off because
what?
My TV provider is the is part of watching CNN online, and I can't use that route anymore. I mean,
Simon, you said something interesting. You said Time Warner and Dish are having a dispute, and I interpreted that to mean that Time Warner is the owner or corporation that has CNN. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually, Time Warner owns a subsidiary called Turner. And
Turner is the company that holds CNN or owns it or whatever.
Yeah, and Cartoon Network.
Sounds to me like if CNN is really that important to you, when your contract expires, you got to switch to Time Warner Cable. And then you're going to be guaranteed CNN forever. You're never going to have a dispute between Time Warner and CNN.
The problem is Time Warner Cable doesn't have an appearance in Picayune, Mississippi.
Oh, that is unfortunate. That is unfortunate.
Okay. Bill, any parting thoughts before I move on to more fun issues?
Well, let me just tell you something I do. I watch news from all over the world through streaming video. I watch it live, and I just sent you a link to a place. In fact, I brought it up on my screen, and I'm watching CNN right now on my PC. And generally speaking, you can watch news, you can watch local news from almost every country in the world through streaming videos live. And so if you want to, you pick up my link after the show and you can sit in front of your PC and watch CNN live. So that's, I'm sorry they did that to you, but, you know, I've always looked around and watched news from all over the world. So anyway, that's my answer. I just want to make you happy because it's always best when Simon's happy, you know, just how it is.
Okay, let's move on. I'll just get grumpy if we keep talking about this subject. Sam, you sent me a most interesting story about a traffic stop. Would you care to explain it?
Yeah, I got it. I'm glad you got it because I thought it was very interesting, didn't you?
Oh, I love
it. Yeah, I mean, it really was. As we talked about OVIs and Peter, this, you're going to love this, Peter.
I love it already. What are we talking about?
Okay, in Clark County, Ohio, by the way, that's where my college, I went to Wittenberg University, and that's where it's located. And some of those people, Simon, were Wittenberg students who were involved in that group. Anyway, the cops have decided, with the State Highway Patrol, the Sheriff's Department, and the Police Department in Springfield to be super aggressive at stopping OVIs to a checkpoint. And any car was going to be stopped no matter what. There had to be no probable cause. They had a name. It was a special, you know, political speak name for it. And what happened was this group of civil libertarians decided to warn the people who were coming into where the checkpoint was that there was a hardcore checkpoint up there, and they were going to stop you for no matter what, and detour them around it, so they wouldn't have to go. And the cops got PO'd that this group was about a mile in front of where the checkpoint was, and they started harassing the civil libertarians, who called it a vampire checkpoint. And that was it, and that was the big story.
There's more to the story, though.
Well, then you can pick it up from there. You're the host.
Right.
That was it to me. That was the one. And then they were being harassed. The Warners, for lack of a better term, were being harassed by the cops at the checkpoint called up another cop who came out and started harassing the people who are holding up signs and bullhorns and trying to warn people about this invasion of civil liberties and without due process. And it's not your typical, it's not your typical DUI checkpoint, OVI checkpoint. It's an OVI checkpoint on steroids.
There an aspect about having a nurse there to administer blood tests
spot. Go ahead, you take it from there. There was, that's why they called it the vampire. They were going to take blood from people if they wanted to.
What was going to be, so they were going to basically
do whatever they wanted to do. They decided, let's say every 10 people were going to take a blood sample, whatever the number was, whatever the methods were, not their methods. We know what their methods were. Their procedures were they were going to follow it. So they might have stopped for car one. Okay, you can go through your car two. Ha-ha. Full-blown strip search, everything they wanted to, and they were going to take take blood from the motorist or the passengers or whatever. Even if if the passengers didn't comply, they were going to arrest them. Even though there was no probable cause for them to draw the blood.
Well, I find that hard to believe. I find it hard to believe that the police would be able to draw blood, which is considered a fairly invasive process, a violation of privacy, without any probable cause at all. So there's something that doesn't make sense there. I don't know what's going on there.
I agree with you. I can't believe, it happened. And
did you say strip search? Did I hear that correctly?
is it what? No, I just think that it's, I just think what you've got is just, I'm not surprised by it. And, we talk about this all the time is that, we've been giving away ever since the Patriot Act and other full things and the, Supreme Court ruling, all sorts of things, that there has been an uptick in more aggressive police behavior with under the pretenses, hey, we're protecting you from the drunk drivers. If you have nothing to fear, if you didn't do anything wrong, you shouldn't fear giving us blood. You shouldn't fear letting us give a strip search to see if there's a gun in the car. You shouldn't fear anything. You should trust us. And that's what this is. And I can't believe they were allowed to do it. Maybe they weren't, maybe they weren't going to take any blood from anybody. But I think they had the potential to do that if they wanted to. And we were going to try it. And that's what these band of good citizens, civil libertarians said, hey, no, you're not. And maybe the cops had no intention of doing that at all. But the fact that they could and, got these people motivated and they did something, they did a good deed, as far as I'm concerned. I like you, Peter. I'm not, you forget more than I'll ever know about law, but I was shocked at without due process. But then again, I live in a state, and you guys have a hardcore state highway patrol and chips and all that. We saw what that one cop did beating the black girl on the pavement a couple months ago. I mean, for no apparent reason, no probable cause. But in Ohio, it's like due process. When you're in a car, due process starts and almost ends when that cop pulls you over and starts to motion. You're guilty already. It's not, they've already assumed you've done something wrong. I've been amazed at it. Just amazed about, because there's so much money in it. There's a lot of money in it for the state, the county, the insurance companies, the local arresting officer, with all due respect, Peter, the attorneys, the justice system. I mean, it's a real moneymaker for a very small segment of population. And why not get more aggressive? Why not get more aggressive and go after people?
And Gary, if you went out for dinner. You're minding your own business. Maybe you've got your wife in the car. I'm sure you would object strongly if you hit a checkpoint and they want a blood sample.
Yeah, I would be outraged, and that's where my libertarian leanings come into play. I'm contrary to what some may think, I'm not a crazy liberal by any means, but I think it goes back to this overbearing need for safety and protection that we do, and this is where big government gets they just get on steroids. And again, it makes you feel like it makes you feel powerless, and I think people get really enraged when they feel powerless. To be tangential, which I like to do sometimes, maybe this is why some people who are just, average schmoes like to have, some automatic weapons and a big arsenal of weapons because, it gives them a psychological erection and they feel big and strong. It certainly would outrage me. I've never seen that in Los Angeles, but I would be pretty upset if I did.
And how about you, Bill? I mean, you're out with your wife. How would you feel if, you get stopped and asked for a blood sample?
I would be a little stressed out. I don't think that's right. We in Jersey, there are some places at certain times of the year in which there are OVI type stops. They stop every single car on a few select roads, and I get stopped there at least once a year. And I pass every time so far, right? And they just ask you questions, and if they have any suspicion about it, they will pull you aside. They say it's for one reason, but if your inspection sticker is out of date or there's anything else that looks questionable with you, they pull you aside and check you out, run a breathalyzer, check for contraband that might be in your car at these stops. You know. So, but blood is just beyond reasonable.
Okay. Let's move on again, and let's get to the real meat and potatoes of this week's program, the midterms. Are just a week away, and due to my lack of CNN, which I won't harp on about, I've been forced to do research elsewhere. The midterms really all boil down to leadership of the Senate. The Republicans need six seats. And that there's some incredibly tight races. But what I find amusing is that one of the tight races shouldn't be tight at all. Kentucky. You got Mitch McConnell versus Allison Grimes. Yesterday, I think it was yesterday, the Courier Journal and the Lexington Herald Leader both ran editorials in support of Grimes, the Democrat, who currently serves as Kentucky's Secretary of State. Gary, you're a political kind of a guy. What do you make of this particular race?
I'm the feeling that I have with elections like this is the feeling that I have when I go to Vegas. I hope I'm going to win, but I think I'm going to lose. I don't know how a Democrat wins in the South. I mean, Mitch McConnell is such a sorry sack. I mean, he just seems to me like an awful man. He seems like an awful, awful man. And when people become more, and believe you me, there are plenty of Democrats like this as well. But when you become more interested in keeping your job or being a slave to an ideology than getting things done, it's disgusting. And what he's done as a leader of the Republican part of the Republican Senate, it's just horrible. Of just stopping any kind of government action, any kind of things that Obama wants to do, is just horrible. So listen, if people can get past their need to have, if Republicans can get past their need for their idea of religion, who's the most religious, or abortion, or who could have 50 guns in their pickup truck, and vote on some kind of things that are meaningful to them, minimum wage and health care. I mean, when you've listened to what had you not heard from Mitch McConnell in this election? Not a peep about Obamacare, not one word. And it's like he's so hypocritical because this guy was saying it's the worst thing in the world. And in Kentucky, it's an amazing success. Amazing.
And Grimes makes me sick too, but I guess she has to do it, and I guess Obama understands, because all she's doing is running away from Obama as fast as she can. Again, I don't know why. The stock market's incredible. Obamacare's a gigantic hit. We're out of wars. But that really does confound me, I think. I've always thought that's a bad strategy, but maybe not in the South. So I really hope that he loses. He's just an awful, awful man, in my opinion.
And how about you, Sam? You're a political
swine. Well, I think
I
hope he loses and we get a new Senate majority. I think the Republicans are going to take the Senate. I think he's going to be an independent in Kansas. That's good because that guy's a moron who's running. I think Mitch McConnell, you know, I think Trump, I think what's catching up to a lot of Republicans and Democrats, if they get a decent opponent and they've been there too long, like Richard Lugar, like McConnell, you know, you could probably go into some of the Democrats, like Scott Brown coming out of nowhere to win, to quote-unquote, win the Kennedy seat, remember, and all that sort of stuff. You see that. If the right opponent comes around, the so-called ones who have been there forever and ever and ever can get beat. They can get beat. And it's easier to knock off a senator than it is a House of someone in the House, believe it or not, because it's a whole statewide run. So I think it's a good thing if McConnell, I hope Grimes wins, and if there's a new Senate, the Senate gets somebody who's more, I would like the other Kentucky senator to be the majority leader, Rand Paul, or maybe some other people out there that are more, you know, can work together with people. Like I've talked earlier, I've seen Rand Paul and Cory Booker work on great ideas together. You know, there's a guy that the Democrats need to work with. Paul's worked with Elizabeth Warren on doing things with the Fed. I mean, there are some people out there willing to work because they have huge issues that they have in common, like the Fed. That's a huge issue for us. One party can't keep saying yes, and one party keeps saying no. Both parties have to work together to audit it, and things of that nature. And I've seen him. Of course, I'm biased. I'm not saying he's perfect, but he'd be better than Mitch McConnell. But I do think, and by the way, Gary, there is a Democratic senator in North Carolina by the name of Kay Hagan who's in a rough race right now. North Carolina's down south, and they're probably going to carry Georgia. The Democrats are going to pick that up. So also there's a Democratic senator in Louisiana, which is pretty south, called Landro. So to say that there's no that, you got to really, you know, they are.
That's a very good point, and let's hope you're right that they win. South. Yeah, you're right about that. I said you're right about
there's
that.
Also some, yeah, I mean, so it's not all crazy down there. It's not all Neanderthal.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty close.
It mostly is.
Mostly
yeah, crazy Neanderthals.
The other problem is, and Gary, the stock market being great doesn't benefit Main Street America. So that's working against both a lot of incumbents because they're not benefiting from it on both sides. And that's why I think there's so many close elections. That's why Mitch McConnell's in a close election. That's why a bunch of incumbent Democrats, the one in New Hampshire and some other places, they're all in tough, tough races because, yeah, the Wall Street's doing great, but not for Main Street. And all 50 states have Main Streets in them. And so I think that's weighing in on this election. That's why there's going to be some upsets. I think Obamacare will definitely rear its head again in 2016. For whatever reasons, I don't know. Because we'll know more about it. If it's more of a success, then we'll hear that it's more of a success. I believe Republicans like it just as much. They get more money from the other the people who are against it, and it also it makes government bigger. So of course Republicans are for it. All incumbents are for it. It helps their status as incumbents, and they can do things with that. But all that stuff. So I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue that's probably is all the one issue, and we're out of the wars, and that's a good thing, Gary. But we're not out of the wars. We are actively involved. We are the air force for Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, at a cost of $30 million a day. So I don't see how we're out of the wars when we are the air force for the world right now, and it's costing the United States Treasury $30 million a day. That sure is good money that could be going to a lot of good things, like metal detectors in all the schools. I think
actually, did I hear you right? metal detectors in all of the schools.
Metal detectors.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I guess.
So that's a, So I think that's what you're going to have happen. The incumbents are going to. I think it's a bad year to be an incumbent Republican or Democrat senator running. And that's what it's going to. And if it was the other way around, if there were more Republican seats up, the Democrats would be strengthening their numbers in the Senate. But the best thing the Republicans have going for themselves is they have there's more Democrat incumbents and open seats up this year. And that's the only reason they're going to win. And history always says the president's party, the opposite party, always does better in the midterm during a presidential election. We've seen that. We saw it under Bush. We've seen it under Clinton. We've seen it under Bush. We've seen it under Obama. And you go all the way through history, that's what usually happens when you only have a two-party system. So no one should really be surprised if they get it. The question will be, as you asked, Simon, what's going to happen when they take over? That's the
bad. It's going to be stasis as usual.
Not if McConnell loses. That's the key things here. That would be a good thing. That would be a good thing. Just like if Harry Reid would go. He's got to go, too. Just like John Boehner's going to. Sure, it would be nice to see some new blood in there, wouldn't it? Some new leadership, some new ideas. People work together and come up with common solutions. And, you know, wouldn't it be nice if I'd like to see Elizabeth Warren as the head of the Republican, the Democratic Senate. There's someone who actually wants to do something. She wants to smack Wall Street around. She wants to do investigations into the Fed. I mean, she's got some great ideas. And she's. I hope she runs against Hillary Clinton. I'd rather see her the first woman president than Hillary Clinton.
Oh, that's 2016.
I know.
It's a lifetime. A lifetime away yet. Peter, do you have any theories on the midterms?
Yeah, I hope Kentucky elects anybody other than Mitch McConnell. That's my theory.
That was short and sweet.
Well, I can't add anything to the comments of my esteemed colleague. So that's really all I got. Anybody but McConnell.
All right. Now, I've heard this from a number of sources. Anyone but McConnell. But what's Mitch McConnell done wrong, other than the fact that he's been under the thumb of the Tea Party? I don't agree with many of the decisions that Mitch McConnell has made, but could he realistically have done anything different? Who wants to tackle that question?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, Sam.
Well, he's the leader of the Senate. He's the one who appoints committee ships. And if you're the head of a committee or whatnot, I'm sorry, he doesn't appoint. He appoints the Republicans to the committees with seniority and all that. He decides a lot of things. He controls the dough where the Republicans get to go to the reelection chances and things of that nature. And I forget what the quote is, but to be an effective leader in Washington, you have to be part brain surgeon and part butcher. And I think he's afraid to butcher the Ted Cruz's of his party. He unwields too much power. Maybe Cruz should have got the ugliest, worst office in the Senate building. The perks. That's the carrot and the stick. Maybe there shouldn't have been so many pork projects in Ted Cruz's state. Maybe more should have went to some other ones and been played a game. So he can do stuff. I mean, he can't do everything perfectly. So that's his point. He probably. If you remember when Rand Paul filibustered over the drones last January, McConnell was totally against that. Totally. He did not want any of that stuff. He couldn't stand Rand Paul, and he's from his own state. He endorsed Rand Paul ran against McConnell's hand-picked successor in the same state. So he hated him. But he got in, he got elected, and he still didn't reach out to him. And it wasn't until Rand Paul made some inroads and got some good national press out of the filibuster that all of a sudden McConnell came to his side. So, you know, I mean, so what else can I say? That's it. Maybe other people can talk about it.
No, okay. Keep going.
No, well, you know, Nancy Boehner does it. Boehner banished is a libertarian-leaning Republican by the name of Justin Amash from a suburb in Detroit. I can't remember which one of the, you know, out there. Boehner kicked him off the committees because he voted against him a couple times. Not that he's a Tea Party dude, but he's an active libertarian, and he runs on a Republican. Boehner stripped him of all his committee rights and everything. Took his parking space away, things of that nature. And these guys are bad news. You know, they're like school boys because he bucked them a couple times on votes and things of that nature. Pelosi did it with some people, too. You know, you look at the great one, Peter, you probably remember him, Tip O'Neill. That guy knew how to horse trade with people in his own factions of his own party, and he had to deal with the crazy thing. That was the rise of the Black Caucus, the Women's Caucus, and all that, and the party was much more liberal under Tip O'Neill, and he was able to hold that together. And they had, you know, and the coalition, you know, and put that together because for the greater good. McConnell isn't. I mean, how he can't keep Ted Cruz in line boggled my mind because they don't have a... They don't have a majority. They the Cruz does filibustering and it's just crazy, you know, whatever. But you know, hey, what are you going to do? So, you know, when it's all over, right? They're gonna go to whoever's writing the bigger checks to them, whether it's a liberal cause or ultra liberal cause or ultra conservative cause. They're gonna go to whoever's writing the check.
Okay, I'm sure Gary is just chomping at the bit.
Well, yeah, look, McConnell could have done a lot more. I mean, you know, Simon, it's hard to say what could he have done given that he became a ultra-right conservative, a Tea Party guy. You know, when McConnell said, our goal is not to advance the American agenda, not to advance the American reputation and what we're doing in the world, but our goal is to make Obama a one-term president. I have no respect for the man. Obama just got elected, and all that he's been doing is trying to obstruct Obama at everything. Now, you don't have to agree with Obama 100% of the time, but how about 20% of the time? You know, how about something where something could get done? So, shame on him. You know, look, it's very clear why I am so disgusted with the Republican Party is because they veered so far right. Sam is right. Back in the 80s and back in the 90s, you could do a lot of deal-making from the Republicans and the Democrats. You simply can't do that anymore. It's just really quite awful. And when you veer that far to the right, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's just shut down. It's all obstruction, and the Republican has done that, not the Democrats.
Okay. Here's a question that always bothers me. Things will come up, you know, subjects that could be talked about, but never get talked about. That they're never allowed to have a straight up and down vote. This bothers me greatly. Does it bother you, Gary?
I like dogs.
What?
Does what bother what exactly?
Oh. Oftentimes, things never get voted on because a straight up and down vote is not permitted. Don't you think it's time for a change? I know that Mitch McConnell got bent out of shape over the, quote, nuclear option, but isn't that what the Senate should be?
I guess I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sam.
You go ahead. You mean
I'm
a straight up
really,
and down vote, no political, no party vote?
Right, just straight up and down.
So no party, there'd be no party vote.
Right.
Like the House of Lords, is that what you're talking about?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, I would love to get rid of political parties. So, yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you. I think the parties have destroyed this, helped one of the many things that have helped destroy this country. I mean, the only independent president we ever had was George Washington. The only regret didn't belong to a political party. And after he left, the Federalists, and we all know what happened after that. You know what I mean? If the best name for a political party I ever heard was the Know-Nothings. That means, Simon, by all means.
How about you, Gary? Should it just be a straight, up and down vote rather than this party? I'm not sure they call them whips over here, but in England they do the whip system. Thou shalt vote with the party.
Well, listen, it would be good. I think the answer on the way to get there is if you could ever get money out of elections, because it's all of these PACs and it's all these people, it's all where the money goes to have about a million commercials. But, I mean, if we, look at it, I think in the historical 50 years from now, Simon, or 100 years from now, if it's not overturned, Citizens United will be seen as one of the Supreme Court votes that really led to the demise of our democracy. Just a horrible, horrible, horrid decision. And unless the average people, you, me, the schmoes of the world who have to put up with all this stuff, rise up and do something, some kind of, like I said, some kind of Gandhi, some kind of person comes forward and captures, the imagination of Americans and says, let's do something different. Kind of like Jesse Ventura when he captured Minnesota, that kind of straight talk, straight ahead stuff. Someone who would come in and say, look, this is crazy. And if I was a Republican or a Democrat, but I didn't have to sit there and to go and go and kiss the ring of the leaders of the GOP and all the people who have, the combination to the safe. And I could just go out there and campaign for 2 months before the election and have a whole bunch of debates and win my and hold my turf. Fine. I could do as many up and down votes as I want. But when you have sit there and said, well, Gary voted against Obamacare or for Obamacare, and there's 50 commercials every hour on every station that there are, except maybe CNN for you, fine. What are you going to do? So you basically have to kiss the ring of the party leaders, and it just totally screws everything up.
Bill, Gary mentioned Obamacare. And we have beaten that subject to death on numerous occasions. Are you finding it curious that suddenly the Republicans have completely backed off from the subject? Even if they win the Senate, Obamacare is not something that anyone other than maybe Ted Cruz wants to play with.
Well, the reason why is because they lied about it. I mean, Republicans are very comfortable lying about things. It was a downright lie, Simon. It was a lie, and this is what confuses me of why people keep on voting them into office.
It was a straight lie. Their ideas about climate change is a straight lie. So they lie to us, and yet there's absolutely no consequence. Certainly, Sam was right in the House of Representatives. It's all rigged, and that's the other thing. We try Citizens United. Someone, Peter, maybe you should do this. Someone's got to submit a suit that we're not getting equal representation because of gerrymandering. Someone's got to bring that to the Supreme Court so that these districts are not carved out so they're unlosable.
I'll do it.
You must be a very wealthy man, Peter.
I'll do it. Problem solved. I'll take it all the way to the high court.
Bill, you've been very quiet.
Wait. Simon, I want one question for Peter. Peter, is it possible to do that?
Well, it's
legally possible.
It is legally possible, but one of the things that the law looks for in any kind of lawsuit is something called standing. And typically speaking, we frown on something called taxpayer standing, where any taxpayer says, I'm a taxpaying American and I pay taxes and my government doesn't work, and here's why. So I have standing to sue the government because of what I perceive to be the problem. So as a general rule, we don't think that taxpayer standing is sufficient to warrant standing to bring a lawsuit. So the question then becomes, if you're going to sue over gerrymandering, who is your plaintiff? Who's actually the aggrieved party who's suing? And I think the most logical answer would be someone who has run for office and has lost as a result of gerrymandering. So you need a plaintiff. A lawyer, typically speaking, just can't file any lawsuit he wants. He needs to file it on behalf of a party. And when it comes to things like challenging the federal government and constitutional issues, you need a plaintiff with standing. And that is the vehicle that you get to bring the case. So you'd have to, this is why people sometimes do things. They know that it's going to violate the law, but they're trying to engineer a case, what we call a test case, to get it up to the Supreme Court. You need an actual plaintiff to get your matter heard. And I'm not sure who the plaintiff would be in this. It sounds to me like the plaintiff would be a politician who lost allegedly as the result of gerrymandering. But it's not that easy. And the short answer to your question is I think it's difficult to get that kind of lawsuit up and running.
It could have been Dennis Kucinich when he was gerrymandered out of his seat. And I think it's Ohio, right? I'm surprised. I mean, he would have been a good person to do it.
Well, that would be a good plaintiff, and that's only half the battle. The other half of the battle.
Wait a minute. Here's the problem. Kucinich lost his seat because of population losses in Ohio. So they were forced to change throughout districts. Follow what I'm saying, guys?
Sure, but let's
So if California gets more population and Ohio loses more population, we lose a representative based on one of every 250,000. So that's the problem. So he was gerrymandered into they had to draw two seats into one because that's the way it is. That's the way the Constitution reads. So you have to redo the Constitution.
Well, just to carry the thought, getting the proper plaintiff is only half the problem. The other half of the problem is it's very hard to win these kinds of cases because the courts tend to have another general rule. And the other general rule is that, generally speaking, if it's a political issue, it's for the legislature to deal with, and it's for the electorate to deal with vis-a-vis their legislators.
And every state gerrymanders differently, too.
Well, so in other words, the courts will typically say it's for the electorate to write letters to their congressmen and tell their congressmen what they want and make their congressmen change. We typically don't get involved in the legislative process unless it's some really big issue and it's obvious that the Constitution is being screwed over somehow.
I do want to let Bill have some words here. Bill, speak to me.
Well, I think the whole, there's so many problems here in America, in the whole political system and everything else. One of the things that I was so disappointed in Obama is that he's just not the right kind of strong leader that he could have been. He had an opportunity to really change things. He stepped in, and the whole thing about a national health care was definitely a step in the right direction, but it always had so many holes. The Republicans came along, and they found every little flaw, whether it was perceived to be a humongous problem or a little problem, they just made it and blew it up to be something that was tremendously bad for a problem that may not have ever been there. And the problem is, if we could get some leadership in here between the Republicans, the Democrats, and the president and his advisor board, and come to say, listen, you know, you got a better idea of how to do this right. Let's get all on the same page. And he just doesn't have the teeth to be able to make that change. And so everyone is just there, you know, they're smart in their own eyes, and the political parties just don't align with trying to do anything right for the government or for the people. They just, they're all out for themselves. And we need a president and the leadership and the senators and the House of Reps to say, listen, we got to work together. We got to grow up. We got to quit, playing bad in the sandbox. We have to do the right thing. And until that happens, we're going to continue to be in this downward spiral.
One of the things I see about the upcoming midterms is complete voter indifference. No one cares, because in reality, it just doesn't matter. It's still going to be gridlock in Washington. Peter, would you disagree with that?
Oh, I think it's always gridlock in Washington. I think that the political process in our country is it's flawed by human nature. And you know, we've talked about getting rid of the parties and replacing them with what? I mean, the parties are themselves nothing more at the end of the day than people who have like-minded views and who associate themselves together. You're always going to have parties in one form or another. And it's just human nature that politics doesn't do anything until it has to do something. And in recent administrations, I completely agree with what Gary said earlier. The conservatives felt incredibly threatened by Obama, and they ramped up every effort they could to oppose him at every juncture they could, regardless of whether the opposition was rational or not, and regardless of whether the opposition was quote-unquote good for the country or not. It just became a mantra. And, you know, you have that in politics. That's part of the game in politics. And, it's always going to be like that, because I think that's just human nature. And unless and until the government has to do something because some issue is such a crisis or is so big, it's just going to tend not to do it. And it's unfortunately one of the blessings of democracy, but it's also one of the curses, because we don't tend to be proactive in terms of preventing problems. We tend to be reactive in terms of addressing them when they become catastrophic. And, you know, that's just not the best way to manage a country, but it's the American way. And it's probably not just the American way, it's probably the way most governments are run, unless you have some sort of benevolent dictator who is going to make the best decisions for everybody. And, you know, because of human nature, we can't really have such a person. So,
We had Nixon.
Yeah, that, I forgot about that. That was a good one. I forgot about that.
Okay. Gary, should we move to a straight proportional representation voting system?
You mean
just one person, one vote kind of situation? Like, you mean like a straight democracy?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think the reason behind that is I think that people who live in like Montana or Nebraska or Kansas, I think they're going to get gypped, or Alaska. And I think the idea of that is it's going to be very tough for those people because they're not going to get any kind of things their way. It's going to be basically New York, Los Angeles, you know, Dallas, Miami, who's determining what happens in our country. But I'm not sure. I kind of haven't thought this through because since I live in L.A., it may be a good thing, but probably not. I think the real cancer in our political system is money. And I think I'm just repeating myself now. Since Citizens United, it's been money on steroids. It's always been money. I mean, I actually was a John McCain supporter in the late 1990s because he was all about, you know, this is before John McCain went crazy, when he was actually like a moderate Republican, and he was all for getting money out of politics, if any of you remember that. So I was actually... I actually was on his website, and I was a supporter of his. For that, I was a one-issue guy. And then he just left that, and he became, you know, part of this the party. But the idea of a representative democracy will happen much more when you get money out of it. And if you got money, if you got public elections, public financing of elections, and you have a certain amount of time, I think it would change the fabric of our country, where the actual individual citizens would be represented, as opposed to if you, Simon, own a corporation and you have, you know, $10 billion, your vote or your political leanings have probably 10,000 more weight than mine does.
Yeah, and that bothers me greatly. I hate the fact that politics has come down entirely to money. Who's got the biggest war chest? And that wasn't the way that the Constitution was written. And again, this is a subject that we've discussed before. Serving was exactly that. You were serving. You were giving up your time for the benefit of the country. And
they all come in thousandaires and they all leave millionaires. All of these guys.
Right.
They all come in and they're all leaving and they're all millionaires, and then they all go to lobbying groups where they're multimillionaires.
Right.
But the thing is, we know this, and you know, I don't have to be a political science PhD to figure this out. I could be driving an ice cream truck and figure this out. Why isn't somebody doing something, you know, about this? Why are the citizens still voting in this way? It's crazy to me. I just don't understand it. It's bizarre. I mean, we really need someone to lead us, some kind of Moses to lead us out of bondage.
Okay, and you know, this is kind of a circular discussion. That there is no way out. Or at least not a way out that I can see. People occasionally like to talk about, you know, election reform until they get elected, and then suddenly they go, oh, no, I get millions of dollars each year, and you know, for my war chest, I'd be stupid to vote to, you know, cut it down. It's nonsensical. It only benefits the politicians. It does not benefit the man in the street. Sam?
Yep. Not. I can't argue with that statement, Simon. It's Citizens United been terrible, but it's been terrible for years. It's gotten worse every year because of the power that comes with it. Gary's right. They go in thousandaires. They go up billionaires. Eric Cantor, he's probably happy he got beat. He ended up at Goldman Sachs, I think. K Street, the lobbying efforts that we see. You know, we talk about, Gary, you've mentioned it too, and I have, Elizabeth Warren. Okay? Great at taking on banks and this and that in Wall Street, except I just was reading a story about her in the Boston Globe the other day. She would interfere with Fidelity, which is a Boston-based hedge fund, a big one, and she kind of like stayed away from that because she went around and used her power to help Fidelity because Fidelity has given her hundreds of thousands of dollars for her campaign. So even she's not immune to it, and you would think she'd be one of the best, but she's not. I mean, how do we get the people out of it? I don't know, revolution, I guess. I don't know, Moses, Gandhi, or, you know, someone like that. You're right, Simon. People talk the talk about it when they get out and they get in, and they don't walk the walk. And I think all of us, Bill, Peter, Gary, Simon, myself, from various parts of the country, we see it at a local level. So imagine how bad it is at a national level. I mean, I see things in my little village of 900 people by the mayor and the council, and they're bought and sold by some of the special interest groups. I can imagine what it's like in Washington. Peter, you were there.
Yep.
I mean, and you were there years ago. Imagine how it is difficult to do anything now with the lobbyists. Remember the things they were going to phase, the junkets, that these politicians were always flying all over the world, on our dime. They still do that. That was going to be taken care of. We hear this stuff about, do you really think they're going to stop that? Do you really think they're going to stop the free haircuts? Remember the check kiting scandals from years ago? They were bouncing checks. People who were making $200,000 a year or whatever they make, they were bouncing checks, and nothing was happening, and the house bank was covering it. They were just, it was just amazing. And why would you want to lose that? Why would you not want to be royalty like that? So how's it going to change? It has to be a revolution, and then we come back to this end. At age 54, guys, I don't want to be one of those eggs that Robespierre talked about that have to be broken in order to fight a revolution. I'm too old.
Peter.
Well, you know, it's easy to identify what the problems are, and it's hard to fix them. And I hate to sound like a broken record, but I just keep going back to, for me, what the age-old problem is. And the age-old problem for me is human nature. If you get rid of parties, you're still going to have parties. If you get rid of money, you're still going to have money. It's just going to be something else. Human greed, human self-interest, it's our greatest engine, and it will be our greatest downfall. We just can't stop doing things for our own self-interest to the detriment of the world around us and other human beings as well. And I don't see any way of stopping it. So I don't hold out any great hope that anything's going to be fixed unless and until something really tragic happens and it's so bad that that's when they start thinking of some remedy and some way to not have this happen in the future, if there's any future to protect. And that's when you get right down to it, that's the way human beings have evolved throughout their entire existence on this planet. They just keep screwing up until they make huge mistakes, and then they try to fix them and try not to repeat them again. But in the course of doing that, they end up back at square one again, and they just keep trying to, prevent something from happening, all the while doing everything in their power individually to ensure that it does. I don't know any way around it. We're just going to have to let the cycle work its course.
If you had public financing of elections, and a 6 week or a 9 week election cycle, would that be a big difference?
Well, let's talk about that. That's a great idea. So public financing of elections, what exactly does that mean? That means that basically that there's some fixed pool of income for people to advertise and that everybody gets an allocated equal amount and that's it.
Yes, and you have if you have a license to have a television station and a radio station or some kind of thing, you have to put on debates.
How do you guard against the underground politicization and that's really the problem. I mean,
but there has to be. I mean, it won't be foolproof, but I think just like if you have 100 magazine clip on a semi-automatic or just 10 rounds in there, yes, there could be murder, but you'll get rid of the mass murder.
Okay,
it will help something.
I think it's a great start. Now, here's the problem. Getting that enacted, getting the current system to embrace that, that's impossible.
I agree with that, unfortunately.
That's impossible. So that's the problem. The problem is even if you come up with a realistic solution, the people, quote unquote, will shoot it down. What are you going to do? I mean, it's the same people who you try to get them to stop smoking and they want to sue you for taking away their civil liberties. You want to get them to stop drinking 64-ounce big gulps and they claim that you have no business telling them what to do even though they're killing themselves. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's hopeless.
Okay.
It's hopeless.
I want to move on to one last story because we're running short on time. I got an email from Mr. Moffy, Sam to his friends, and it was merely a title. It just said, "Also, why no shootings in inner city schools?" I rather liked it, because I thought about it, and I went, yeah, he's right. Inner city schools don't have any shootings. Sam, would you like to explore this subject?
And the only reason I brought that up was, of course, because of the shooting that took place in Seattle, Washington, which we're just learning more that I didn't realize until today that he shot two of his cousins. I mean, to talk about even take it more horrific than it already is. Well, the only reason I said that is on Thursday I had duties at my school in the inner city, and at 7 o'clock I had to turn on the metal detectors. So they come through a metal detector, then they open up their backpacks, and they also get wanded. That's why there's no shootings in inner cities.
There's your answer.
Right. So my question now becomes to you, that's the one reason. They probably, the question now is, why aren't we doing that in all these other schools? I mean, we need to deter. I'm not like the NRA. Let's arm teachers. Let's put all the kids go through all the school systems, and there's a metal detector, and that's the only way to get in and out. And visitors can only go through at most public schools, suburban and urban. You can only go through the front door when you're a visitor. You can't go in any door you want. So that front door is going to have your metal detector would be set up, and everyone's got to go through it.
Sam,
that way
I
no one can get in. And I'm not saying it's
Sam, I go to courthouses every day. I go to federal and state courthouses throughout Southern California. I can never, ever, ever get into a courthouse without going through a metal detector. And I have to do it, and every member of the jury pool, which is the general public, has to do it. Everybody has to go through a centralized point, and they got to go through a metal detector. Now, it can be cumbersome. It can be complicated. It's just like the detection things at the airport. There's always somebody doing something stupid to slow it up. What? I got to take all the change out of my pocket? What? I can't wear this giant belt through the metal detector? What? But, the bottom line is that's where we're headed, and I can think of no good reason why we don't just have that in every single school. And why stop at schools, shopping malls, supermarkets? I mean, pretty soon, that's where we're all going to be anyway.
And that, at least in the schools, is the start. And so I agree with your analogy. It's great.
Absolutely.
My wife is a court reporter. She did the same thing. Says about it all the time. Why, you know, you got it at the school. I get it at the courthouse just like you do. And that should be it. And I think that would be, it would seriously help. It would seriously deter people from coming in. I don't think you'd have any more shootings. No,
there's obviously a problem at schools. You're dealing with, you know, unstable people subject to a lot of pressure and stress and God knows what else. And it's obviously a problem. We've seen it enough times. So, you know, you're right. I can't think of any good reason why we wouldn't do it.
No, and it can't be money. It cannot be like, look, if we can give police departments excess federal tanks, then we certainly can give schools excess Transportation of America older metal detectors, right? They got to be lying around somewhere. Maybe the embassies around the world upgraded. There's got to be some to get things started.
Sam, what's gonna happen to the companies that manufacture these medical detecting devices when someone passes a law that says every school has to have them? What's the first thing that those companies are gonna do? They're gonna raise their prices.
Go on a marketing campaign.
They're going to go on a marketing campaign. They're going to raise their prices, and you know what? But you know, there you go. That's a free market economy at work. What can we do?
Yeah, I mean, that's a bad thing. Whereas, you know what, Peter? We'll take it one step further. In a real good world, they would donate them, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would.
I mean, in a utopian society, that should happen.
They donate them. That's funny.
Yeah, I'm trying to be sarcastic, of course, but could you imagine?
I mean,
it's not like they're not making billions and billions of dollars. And Gary, that's what I keep coming back to. You keep going, and I'm not picking on you. The stock market's doing great. Yeah, it is for a select few. And I really think that's the threat. In a way, in the old days, you used to point to it, that means it's a good economy. But in today's stock, the way the world is made with money now, it's only benefiting select few. It does not.
Sam, I don't feel picked on, but if I'm some guy or if I'm some public school teacher, and after Bush left office, the stock market was at 8,000 and then it was at 17,000, I agree with you completely that it's helping only the people at the top, which is why, you know, the stock market and the tax system should be rehauled to have much more money from the top coming down. But if I have a lot of my money in pensions, a lot of my money in IRAs, a lot of my money in that way, I'm still doing better. You're right. You're not wrong.
Sam, neither am I.
Yeah. I'm not wrong either that the person's doing better if the stock market for them is 17,000.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying. If you're lucky enough to have a retirement account that's tied into hedge funds and this and that and blah, 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 yeah, you're still doing great.
A lot of pensioners are, a lot of teachers are. Yes, they might make double their $50,000 to $100,000. The millionaires are making $10 million into $100 million. You're right. I totally agree with you.
Right, and that's the problem. And that's what we both agree, I think. Right, okay.
Yes.
Good. And that's okay. You know, they make tens of millions. They don't need to go. They don't have the goofy rules. If we want to get our pensions, we want to tap into our 401ks, you know, you're screwed.
Yes. God forbid you want to take the tax rates from the Bush tax rates down to the Clinton tax rates. God forbid that the top 1 or 2% pay 3% more taxes, because I promise you, it will destroy our country.
God forbid our corporations have to pay a corporate tax.
Right, that too, for sure.
I'd trade that. I would let these individuals keep their low tax rates if the corporations that they all own, run, and are in charge of had to pay a real corporate tax.
I'm sure they wouldn't pass that on to the little guy. No way.
In some way, shape, or form, they would.
They pass everything on. If they have to buy Kleenex to sneeze, they charge the consumer a quarter for that. I mean, you know, they pass everything on.
Yeah, they sure do.
And then they go and cut the wages of the people in China making it. So instead of making 3 cents a day, they're making 1.5 pennies a day.
Everything is a way to make money.
You don't understand, guys. You don't understand. To rent a G5
is about $20,000 an hour. So these assholes, these 28, 30-year-old people who are working in hedge funds, they need that extra 3% because they want to rent their G5s to take them up the Aspen for the art show. So
yeah,
you don't understand the problems
that. They
have.
Can't do it.
That's
they
right.
got to make us pay for it.
Hey, Gary, you bring up a great
yes.
point. Let's take this one step further. How about trying to, and they all live in Manhattan, and what's the cost of living in Manhattan? Or Los Angeles, or Chicago, or all the big cities, where all the big companies are making all this money. So that's the excuse. Hey, my rent just went. I want to buy a one-bedroom a condo in Manhattan. It costs $2.6 million. Shit, I gotta pass that on. As Peter would say, I gotta raise more money. I've gotta make $50,000 an hour, and I gotta manipulate wealth. So, I mean, what do they do? All they do is manipulate wealth. They don't create any jobs. That's what boggles my mind. All they do is manipulate money, and the only job they create is maybe they hire an extra illegal nanny to au pair to help them.
Yes, yes, an extra chauffeur to take them to the bank.
But I'm amazed at the cost of living. You know, I have two children who live up there, and they've got good jobs. They work their fannies off, and then they can barely afford to live there. They can barely afford the cost of living there.
I'm amazed that Republican people who make $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 a year and say that 1% needs God forbid they pay 39% taxes with all their deductions when they have a whole building full of accountants trying to get them less as little as possible. But God forbid they have to pay Clinton's 39% because that's too onerous as opposed to the 36% they pay now. God forbid. And the guy who's driving the truck for Budweiser says that's we can't raise taxes because it will destroy our economy. We get the government we deserve always, unfortunately.
And you get the corporate raiders we deserve too. The corporate big boys. You know, it's funny, Gary, you bring that up. When I was working my manual labor, when I did my summer vacation at manual labor. One of the big things I learned at the level at the Republic Steel, BFI, Waste Management, that's been gobbled and chewed up 20 different times, is that they were able to come down to these workers, force them to take more, work more hours, 12-hour days, no overtime, or they were going to lose their health care. Well, not lose it. It was going to be sliced and diced and be worse than it really was. So these guys worked 12 hours a day, no overtime. And they're told, hey, well, because when they bought, and what all that happened was is the new corporation that owns them just, as Peter would say, hey, they had to leverage themselves to borrow money to buy this company up, and now they have to slice it and dice it, and so they can squeeze every penny out of it and cut costs and not give out and not do things. You know, instead of having two men in a garbage truck, you have one man in a garbage truck. And that's it. And, and they understood that. And these guys had nowhere else to go. No one was going to take these guys' case unless they go on strike. And they can't afford to go on strike. So nowadays, what's going to happen, they'll find 50 people to replace them, at $35,000 a year instead of $50,000 a year. So they work the hours and they do everything, and that's it. And unfortunately, that's a sad state of affairs of this of our nation as it is right now. You know, it's money, money, and more money.
Okay, gentlemen, we're going to be absolutely off the air in 5 minutes. So I want to get everyone's final comments on whatever you like. I'm going to start with Bill.
I have thoroughly enjoyed today's show. In fact, it's nice to see us all on the same page with different viewpoints, but our disagreements were didn't really make a difference. It didn't. It was different points of view. Even Gary, I've come to respect you more and to listen to you and see where you're coming from. You're 10 for 10 on every one of your points, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. My only warning to you is that You know, what do you do when there's a wing nut who agrees with you? You know, whether or not you have to reevaluate your life or not, Gary, I'm not sure. But I thoroughly enjoyed your comments today.
Okay. With that, I'll go immediately to Gary.
Wow. Wow. I'm going to go make love to my wife right now.
Whoa.
That was fantastic.
Oh, so you're telling me that Bill is sort of like a biographer
yes.
for you?
Yes. Yeah, I'm just full of myself right now. Thank you, Bill. I'm glad that I stayed between the lines today. Good for me. Yeah, it was a fun show, and you know what? I think we all feel the same way. Why, you know, we're just four guys, right? Four or five guys. Why do we know this and no one else does? And I know that they do. We need Gandhi. Find me a political Gandhi, please. That's all I have to say.
Okay. And Peter, are you going to join in the love fest?
Gary, pleased to meet you. Did you call me? I'm here to help you. Did someone say Gandhi? I thought it was funny because what's Gary going to do when a wing nut agrees with him? I thought that Gary spends his whole day getting wing nuts to agree with him. That's what I thought. So great show. Loved it. Awesome. And I think we identified more problems than we solved today, but that's what I love about the show. We leave so many things unsolved for the next week.
Right. Well, I learned it by watching my wife's soap operas. Have you always noticed the way they end a program? You know, you have to watch the next day.
To be continued.
Right. And this discussion certainly will be continued. Sam.
I want to thank everybody for a great time. You know it's a great show and the time goes by fast. And it flew by today. So I had a great time. I echo everybody's sentiments. We got a lot of work to do, but keep talking about it. You know, we'll only make ourselves better, and that's a good thing at the minimum, and maybe reach a couple people out there. You know, who knows, you know, what can happen. And, you know, let's just be, you know, let's just keep the show rolling, keep the ideas coming, and, you know, maybe, if, as you said, Gary, if the four of us can figure out, five of us, six of us, whatever, why can't the others figure it out? But I think the answer is they have figured it out, and they don't want anybody else to know, so they throw red herrings out. And that's the problem. And that's the problem we're facing. Nowhere to go but up.
I'm in total agreement. This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe day and week. And I'm sure we'll be back again next Sunday with yet another edition of the News in Reviews. Till then, goodbye.